Yes, for our visitors, there are times when I do change the sermon depending on what's going on in the world, but since this is what's going on in the world, I'm going to talk about news and information and democracy. Socrates said that we would do the good if we only knew what the good was, that our moral acts were contingent upon good information as well as honest reflection. And you can reflect honestly over bad data and come up with nonsense. That good information is the first step towards a good life, a good society. And that means that communication, information are vital to who we are and vital to a democracy. How do we make good decisions about people whom we elect, or policies that we select or advocate for or against, if we don't have good information? That's critical to everything we do and everything we are. Our opening hymn, where I got to self-characterize as drone, that's usually the kindest word that's ever said about my singing, and got to drone, breathe in, breathe out. It's central to religion as a metaphor and as a reality. In Ecclesiastes, it says that the spirit of life is breath. The translations that most of us read of Ecclesiastes say, vanity of vanity saith the preacher. That's not what it says. It says in the Hebrew, havel havalim, havel havalim, amar koheleth, hakol havel. It's onomatopoetic. It is breathing. It's breath of breath, breath of breath. Everything is but a breath. That's what spirit is. Spirit is breath. That's what inspiration is. And somebody expires. It is the central religious metaphor, not simply of Judaism, but also of Christianity and all of the meditative practices of Eastern religion. It's about centering that breath and the understanding that what nourishes us in life and what nourishes our souls can be invisible, insubstantial, unmeasurable in a sense, but yet completely vital. Who we are depends on what we breathe in. Toxic air, toxic ideas, what we breathe out depends on what we have breathed in the form of inspiration and expiration, inspiration and action. Democracy needs good information. And institutions and governments of all kinds, religious and secular, always try to manage and niche the information in order to control what we feel and what we do. Everything is manipulative, but that's not automatically bad. As long as you understand what is being asked of you and take some responsibility for it. If I'm polite, it may in one way be a manipulation. So we have to understand what's going on, that people are trying to sway our emotions and manage what it is that we take in is not automatically cynical, as long as we are aware and conscious. It is, however, sometimes cynical. And this is not a new development. From the beginning of recorded time, those who had power wanted to manage information. In biblical times, not everybody, this will amaze you, read biblical Hebrew. And biblical Hebrew was not spoken for much of Jewish history. And so when ancient Jews would take out the Torah written in Hebrew without any vowels, So when you see R, just the example, this is not an actual example, but a model. If you see the letters R and D together, it could be read, read, road, a road. You could just add any kinds of vowels you want, beginning, middle, and end. So somebody had to tell you what the words were, because you couldn't read them, what the vowels were because they were invisible, and what it all meant. That's why in the Bible it says that Ezra the scribe set up a wooden pulpit in front of the water gate. Now, you need to understand that that's the water gate of the city of Jerusalem and had nothing to do with Nixon. That's a whole different water gate, but that's how everything is open to interpretation. God was at the Watergate? Ezra was at the Watergate? There's a Mitt Romney line in here, but I'm not going for it. So there was an explaining of the law, because the law is not objective. In the history of the church promulgated the Word of God in the original language of God, the language that God spoke to his angels, which, of course, was Latin. And unless you're a Lutheran, and then it was Danish or Norwegian. But the Bible was in Latin. And how many people could read Latin? And the church didn't want people to read Latin because that would give them the power to see what was in the book and to interpret what was in the book. When the forces of the Reformation started translating the Bible from God's language of Latin into the vulgar, called the Vulgate, that's related to our word vulgar, into the Vulgate, the language of those people down there, the church was sore afraid that people would get a hold of it, see what's in it, and try and have some difficulty reconciling the lives of the princes of the church and the life that the tribes of Israel led and that Jesus and his apostles and disciples led. And they didn't want that to happen. And worse, when Gutenberg and the printing press came along and made it possible not for just hand copying the Bible, but to actually print copies of the Bible in the language of the people and to teach people how to read, you had the greatest impetus for the Reformation. Information is power. And information and people thinking for themselves and questioning the authority of those who would tell them what the words meant was hugely threatening 3,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, 1,000 years ago, and today. Today, still, rabbis and priests and ministers and mullahs will tell you, because most of us don't read the original texts in the Hebrew or the earliest texts in the Greek or the Latin or the Aramaic or the Arabic, they will tell you what the words say, what they mean. Much of the religious education in the world is carried out in languages that the people don't speak or read or understand. It is so open to interpretation that when the rabbi, priest, minister, or mullah tells you what it means, you ought to at least do some investigation. Just the example that I gave you of Havel Havalim. Vanity of vanities is so depressing. Breath of breaths is so inspiring. Completely different meanings. In modern Islam right now, the Surah Al-Kafiruna, the surah to the kafir, to the people who are covered up, usually translated as unbelievers, says, "In the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate, I don't follow what you follow, nor do you follow what I follow. You don't serve what I serve, nor do I serve what you serve." Well, there are some imams who teach So everybody have a nice day. You go your path, I go my path, no problem. Others will say, well, you have to die because you don't serve what I serve and you don't follow what I follow. The same words read and interpreted and taught completely differently. If we sat here in good and open faith and had a lecture on the American Constitution by Madam Justice Ginsburg and Mr. Justice Scalia, you would not recognize that they were talking about the same black marks on the same pieces of white paper. And no one's being dishonest. No one's being dishonest. They are reading and seeing this information differently and teaching it differently. Such is kind of the chaos and challenge of trying to make sense out of our world, because when we tune in this world, we don't have the same restrictive problems of no one is speaking our language. They're speaking our language, but we might mistake news for objective reporting of facts, and that would be a mistake. We live in what's called the information age. I submit to you that we should call it the misinformation age, because there is so much stuff out there trying to figure out what is true, what is partially true, what is an error, and what is an intentional cynical distortion is really hard work. But it's work that we have to do if we're going to make intelligent, informed, moral decisions about how to be in this world. We look at what this information age has, and we see a consolidation of aggregators, a consolidation of who tells us what's happening. And there are two news decisions, and let me just, for the newcomers here, share some of my bona fides. I write columns for three newspapers. Our local Fullerton Observer, whose motto is small enough to tell the truth. The Puerto Vallarta Mirror, whose motto is, okay, John, you don't have to speak Spanish, just give it to us in English. And the Los Angeles Daily News, whose motto is, oh, please read us. And it's working. Their circulation is going up while the LA Times is going down. But our news sources are contracting. Fewer companies own more papers, and those companies also own television stations and cable stations and manage internet sites. Whether you're talking about Huffington Post and its association with AOL and AOL's association with Time Warner, or you're talking about Viacom's association with everything, or Charter, NBC, Universal, Vivendi, Water Company, and cable installers, you're talking about these fewer and fewer but larger and larger companies who tell us what is important for us to know in their judgment. That judgment is not always evil or corrupt, but it's always interested in grabbing your eyes and grabbing your attention. So the first thing that you learn is that what we're getting on the news is not necessarily important. It's what some news source thinks you're going to read, which means they want you to read it for one of two reasons. It will influence how you act in the world, or it will influence the ads that you see and what you buy. We are fighting for your eyes, your attention, and your wallets. I was giving a lecture the other day on the debt ceiling and the bond market and why the debt ceiling raise that should have made it more expensive for us to sell our bonds actually made it less expensive for us to sell our bonds. And I watched as a bunch of really smart people's eyes glazed over. As many jokes as I put in, as much energy as I did, as many songs and dances, it was please, can't we talk about Lindsay Lohan or Paris Hilton or Charlie Sheen, something that we understand and feel superior about? Don't give us the details. There is a feedback loop that is relatively innocent with the media that says, we're going to give you what we think you want. We're going to measure what you want, and we're going to respond to it. That's part of the problem. Part of the problem is, you know, we have sighted the enemy, and it's us, as Pogo observed some years ago. But part of the problem is also what they want us to know. And those are related. The other day, I was surfing news, MSNBC, Fox, and CNN, to find out what's going on in the world and what's important. Fox, I learned that Obama is a total failure, an abject failure, and is in the far left wing of world politics. On MSNBC, I learned that Obama is a total failure, an abject failure, and only a reincarnation of George W. Bush. They were both doing politics and horse races, which are interesting. I'm interested in that stuff. CNN was in Somalia and in a Kenyan resettlement camp and feeding station. That's news. But we don't want to watch that 20 hours a day or 18 hours a day. It's too hard. It's too depressing. But that is what news is. We go for the fluff because the fluff sells, partially. We go for a view of the world because these are the aggregators who hand us this view of the world. My favorite example from American history is 1959. That's ancient history for a couple of you here. 1959, while Kennedy was running for the presidency, the Red Chinese were sending 8, 10, 12 artillery shells into the islands of Quemoy and Matsu, islands that we have not heard of since 1960. But it was front page. What's Kennedy's policy on this Quemoy-Matsu? 8, 16 shells are coming in every day. After the election, 115, 118 shells were coming in every day, and the story was on page 38, buried as just a datum. The objective facts were worse, but the story disappeared because the news judgment was people no longer cared. We couldn't ride that particular horse. We have to be very aware of what gets chosen is chosen for reasons not always cynical, but always trying to grab our eyes. Did you ever wonder why so often Time Magazine and Newsweek have the same cover from week to week? It's because they've judged what the news stories are and that the cover will sell magazines. You wonder about the Michelle Bachmann cover a week ago on Newsweek? I will tell you, and let me confess to you that I'm a political liberal. That cover was offensive. It was a news judgment. It was an editorial as much as the blackening up of O.J. Simpson was. Now, you can like her or not like her, but that was not an attempt to show you a picture of Michelle Bachmann. That was an attempt for the Newsweek audience, whom they calculate to be liberal, to buy a magazine that showed her as the Queen of Rage with funny, mad-looking eyes. That's a manipulation, and it's a manipulation to sell magazines. It happens all of the time, left, right, and center, in terms of news. What do we do as responsible citizens to be informed when we understand there is this consolidation of bigger and wealthier corporations controlling everything in terms of what we get, what we read, what we see, what the pictures are? Well, in this world of increasing, there's a paradox. There's a world of increasing control because of the growth of these corporations, and there's the Wild West of the Internet, where it is impossible to discern truth from fairy tale. And that as soon as you get something that says this has been Snopes'd, if you don't Snopes it yourself or use any of the other sites, you cannot assume that it is close to being true. You are would be amazed at the things that I have learned about the world that aren't true from really well-meaning people who forward urban myth and legend and fear and projection, some of which is completely innocent and some of which starts as a well-calculated way of manipulating a population. We need to be careful consumers of the news. So if those of you who caught that I was surfing and watching Fox want to know why I was watching Fox, for the same reason I read Drudge, for the same reason I read liberal, conservative, far left, far right, follow Al Jazeera, follow the Jerusalem Post, follow all of the sources that I can in order to try to discern and distill what is more rather than less likely, so that I can at least in good faith attempt to make an informed decision. Nothing less than our democracy depends on our attempts to do this. There is no single source, not even the blessed New York Times, that you can take as gospel. And in fact, how are you going to take the gospel as gospel? How good's your Greek? How good's your Syriac Aramaic? When Billy Graham reads the gospel and preaches his message, he reads, in the same way that Scalia and Ginsburg, differently from Jerry Falwell, how Jerry Falwell did. When Rick Warren, down the street from us, reads the gospel, he reads an evangelical social gospel that is very different from Rick Perry's Pastor John Hagee. The words are the same. The interpretations, the understandings, what is conveyed is very different. So no preacher, no pundit should take from us our responsibility to go out and search for what passes for truth, to search for what actually happened, to search for the good information that will lead us to make, if not perfect, at least better decisions about how to be in the world. Nothing less than our democracy depends on our asserting our right to freedom of information and taking our responsibility for having evaluated it and made it our own if it is what we are going to act upon. As Socrates said, in order to do good, we have to know what the good is. It may differ from person to person, but what it always has in common is a principled search for good information about the world and how we see ourselves in that world. News, information, and democracy are a holy, secular Trinity that need one another in order to live.